You know, this is one of those topics that no one really wants to think about, but if you're a parent, a homeowner, married, or helping take care of aging parents, it's something that honestly deserves a little attention. I'm talking about estate planning. And before you tune out thinking it's complicated or expensive, that's actually why I want to mention trust and will. Trust and will makes estate planning feel way less intimidating than it sounds. They offer modern, attorney-designed wills and trusts that you can create online. And the process is surprisingly straightforward. In fact, you can create a will in as little as 30 minutes. That includes things like guardianship for your kids or pets, how your assets are distributed, and even healthcare directives. Don't wait until it's too late. Protect your loved ones with Trust and Will, the most trusted name in online estate planning. Go to trustandwill.com/future to get 20% off. That's trustandwill.com/future for 20% off. trustandwill.com/future.
The Claire Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Before we start this next item, we're going to deal with issues including pregnancy loss and fatal fetal abnormality. And I know this might be upsetting for some, so listener discretion is advised at this point. Even though abortion has been legal here in certain circumstances since 2018, many women we know still face an uphill battle. One of those is Dervla Brogan, and she joins me. Dervla, you're very welcome to the programme, and thank you for being here. You got in touch with us to tell us your story. Will we go back maybe and start with when you found out you were pregnant, and you talk us through from there?
Yeah. And firstly, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to share the story. I'll bring you back to September 2023. My husband and I had our 12-week scan with our second baby. And as everybody is, you're excited, you're happy. We all know the 12-week scan stress. So we were delighted, started telling our friends that we were expecting our second child. One of my friends at work actually then pulled me aside and just asked me randomly, had I done the Harmony scan? And that's essentially, it's a scan to look for abnormalities or any fetal abnormalities.
That's an optional scan,
it's
isn't
optional.
It?
And it costs like nearly about €500. And there's different names depending on the vendor that provides it. But the one that we were familiar with was Harmony. At the time, we were saving for a house in Dublin. So we were counting all our pennies. But she did plant a seed of doubt in my mind. So we said, okay, luckily we can do it. So we decided to do it. And within the next few days, we had booked in to get the scan. And I was very casual going into it, assumed it was all going to be fine. It was just a kind of a tick the box, let's just make sure. But the minute the scan started, we were told that there was something significantly wrong. So basically everything changed straight away.
So where did you go from there then with that information? What do you do?
We basically straight away, we were extremely lucky with the care that we got in Ireland. Just to say that off from the offset, we were in Holles Street and they were unbelievable. Straight away, they referred us on to the fatal fetal clinic there. And from that day, basically, we underwent extra scans, extra blood tests, extra fluid tests, all the medical tests that you can get to try and figure out what was happening.
How were you then?
I was broken. I previous to this, I would have considered myself quite resilient, emotionally able and strong. But in that scan, I completely collapsed. I broke. I just fell apart. Thankfully, like, I have a really supportive family and husband. And without that, I don't know how we would have got through. But as well as that, the care that we got in Holles Street was phenomenal.
Yeah.
The empathy oozed out of everyone that we met there.
And did you know, were you clear what was wrong at that point?
No. So all we knew from the scans was that our little girl, we knew it was a girl, she had no limbs. Her limbs weren't forming. Her chin was extremely recessed. And those would indicate that she would never have been able to walk, talk, feed, hold herself up. But we didn't have an official diagnosis as to what was causing it. And all of the tests that were going on in the background were trying to get us a diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Without that diagnosis, per the Act that we all know about, the Health Act, if a diagnosis doesn't come back to show that the baby can't survive 28 days, within the 28 days post-birth, you can't be cared for in Ireland. Or you can't.
So you can't, like, you cannot skip that step. You have to have a clear diagnosis. This is the problem with this child. And you're in this situation. It's a limbo, isn't it? Because you cannot do anything legally. And nobody here can help you.
No. Nobody can tell you what's the right thing to do or what's the wrong thing to do. So we basically just had to go with the information that we had, which was that she was never going to have any quality of life. Mm-hmm. We didn't know if it was fatal. But I say this so casually, but with the information that we had and the support that we were getting from the healthcare professionals here, we made the decision to travel to the UK to do what we felt was the right thing to do for her, for us and for our other little girl at home.
So your choices were, I wait for this diagnosis to come, mm-hmm. or I travel now. Mm-hmm. So what was your calculation around ultimately deciding that you needed to travel?
So we knew from the information that we had that for us it was the right thing to do. It took us a long time to get there, regardless of whether we got an official diagnosis or not.
Yeah.
So we made that decision based on the information that we had. There was tests going on in the background all along, trying to figure out what it was, but we had ultimately made the decision to travel. And on the day we were going to travel, we got a call from the geneticist in Ireland to say that there was an actual diagnosis, and that she had a gene mutation of filamin B gene. It basically is called Boomerang's dysplasia, which means it's fatal.
So you got the information you were waiting for on the day you were travelling?
Yeah.
Did that alter things for you? I mean, what did you? I'm sure you paused in that moment and said, will I go? Will I stay? How many weeks were you at that stage?
I was coming on to 18 weeks.
Okay.
So we had been waiting for essentially 6 weeks. So this was all over a 6 week period, which, like, you're trying to live your life as normal. Like, I was back at work. I was trying to be normal in meetings at work, trying to be normal with people that you'd meet on the streets that may not know what you're going through, because, you know, that Irish thing, you don't want to make them feel awkward if you tell them what you're going through.
Yeah.
But I can't explain in that moment when we got the call, the feelings. It was like a complete juxtaposition of emotions, of feeling happy that we had a diagnosis and that we knew we were doing the right thing, and also feeling broken because there was
confirmation of,
exactly.
of what was wrong.
Exactly.
And you carried on with your journey then that
we
day?
We did. The geneticist was unreal, and she explained our options. She did tell us that we likely could be cared for in Ireland because it technically met the criteria of it being fatal, so she wouldn't survive up to 28 days post-birth. But it had to go to a board, basically, for two healthcare professionals or two physicians to confirm that that was, in fact, the case.
Yeah, as per the law.
As per the law. And that board only meets occasionally. It's not as if, oh, Dervla and Michael, my husband, they need a decision today. Can you meet today? So we would have had to wait days, weeks. If there was a disagreement, we would have to wait for longer. So we still went ahead with the trip. Mm-hmm. I literally couldn't wait another second, and neither could my husband.
Well, I think when you've made your decision and you're in motion, you know, and you've got a child at home as well, there's all of these things, logistical and emotional, that sometimes you have to just go with where you are on that day, right?
Yeah, 100%. And that we just had to go with the information that we had, and sometimes making a decision like that is the hardest part. So to go back on it and to feel like you're going back to square one was a difficult thing to even consider.
And I don't know if you want to talk about what that was like then, that journey, that trip.
Yeah, I'd be happy to talk about it. I think it's actually very important because we weren't prepared for some of the things that we were faced with. We made the journey over. There are two options. You can fully birth the baby and go through natural labour, or you can have a procedure. You're put under anaesthetic and it's basically, it happens.
Yeah.
And we were back and forth for so much on this, but the mental state that I was in at the time, I just didn't think I was strong enough to be able to
go through the labour.
My husband really helped and supported me on that decision. And we had been advised as well that maybe because of the mutation that she had, that we might have been quite traumatised if we did see her. So
These are such huge decisions to make. I mean, I'm trying to put myself in this position. I don't know, given what you were going through, traveling, you know, dealing with the grief of it and then trying to make these massive decisions, which you then have to be comfortable with for the rest of your life. It's just...
That's exactly it. And there's days that I, many, many days that I sometimes regret the decision.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we never got to hold her. And that's something that we have to live with. But like, we made the decision at the time with the information that we had. So we just, I just have to bring myself back to that moment and remind myself it was the right thing then. But when we, so we travelled over, we went to the clinic, and again, like everybody, I can't fault anybody that we met. Everybody we met along the journey were unbelievable. We, before I went in for the procedure, we were told that we would hopefully be able to get some footprints, which was going to be really special. So I woke up, and I'm on my own. Obviously, when I wake up, my husband has to wait for me to come into recovery. And obviously, after an anaesthetic, you're kind of, you're not thinking straight.
All over the place.
You're all over the place. And then with the emotions of everything else on top of it, I was like, is this real world, real life? I was told in that moment that they couldn't get footprints.
And you were told that straight away, were
straight
you?
Straight away, oh, God. Yeah. And that's another thing I just really wasn't expecting, and something that I have to live with. I never asked the question as to why. And I don't know if it was because of her condition or if that the procedure was quite traumatic. And that I'll never know that.
Mm-hmm.
But we got into recovery anyway, and we were getting ready to leave. And just to preface this, the clinic that we went to were amazing. They were very empathetic. And I think that they were just working with the resources that they had. But we had made the decision to bring our little girl, we called her Robin. We'd made the decision to bring her home because we wanted to have a service with her grandparents as well. And so we were waiting for them to bring her to us. And we got Robin in a lunch bag. And we were told to go to Aldi to get some frozen veg to keep her cold for the journey home. So that was something I was not prepared for. So if anybody else is in the same position, just to that was kind of the straw, I think, at the time. And also, while I was going through the procedure, my husband was trying to get in contact with the airline to give them a heads up that we would be coming through with Robin. And he faced hurdle after hurdle, trying to get somebody to understand the situation. And he was trying to manage all this while I was going through the procedure. And it was a horrendous experience for him. We eventually got somebody. And from that point, it was unbelievable. It was smooth sailing, but he shouldn't have had to go through all that.
Yeah. And this is all related back to the fact that you had to travel,
mm-hmm.
you know, to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So you get back home then.
Mm-hmm.
How were things after that?
We got back home, and again, because we travelled, there was nowhere that could keep her for us until we had the service. And we actually had to keep Robin at home in our freezer until we had the service. There are options here that if you have the procedure here, that they will obviously keep the baby. Mm-hmm. In the right conditions until you get the opportunity or until you organise the service. But we had to keep her at home in our freezer.
Yeah.
Now, I do know that there's so many support services out there and charities that provide you information and can help you navigate all these things. But we were in such a weird headspace. We couldn't even pick up the phone to ask for help. We just kind of had to work and take it minute by minute and day by day. So there could have been other options, but we were just working with what we had.
Did you feel afraid in some way because you'd made that decision?
Afraid of what people would think?
Yeah, afraid of how you might be viewed if you reached out for help because you'd taken a decision to leave when most people think that this is available here, you know? Did you have any of that weight that I've made this decision, so now I have to live with the consequences of this, whether that's, you know, in dealing with Robin's remains and so on?
That's That's actually a really good question. And I think because of the people we were surrounded by with or by throughout all this, couldn't have been anything but supportive.
Yeah.
It really didn't come in. I think maybe
I'm glad to hear that, because I think women do feel that sometimes. Yeah. They feel like, well, I've taken these decisions now, so I have to deal with the consequences on my own.
Yeah.
So I think that is a good thing to hear, that you did not feel like that, because you should never feel like that, of course.
And I think maybe in the early days, maybe it could have come into my thought process, but literally every single person that we met was so supportive, couldn't have been more empathetic towards our situation. So not really, to be honest. I felt very supported.
But it's a big decision to come and talk about this now. But you clearly feel that something needs to be fixed, to be changed.
Yeah. I think I'm only at the stage now that I'm ready to talk about it. And ultimately, you know, the Health Act needs to be changed. Like, everybody knows that, well, not everybody, but a lot of people are aware of that.
Well, people who've gone through your experience, but exactly. I mean, other people who don't have experience of it won't know what it's like, or that something like this can happen.
And I think that's why I really wanted to speak about it. And just for people to understand that these decisions are never made lightly. It's not a decision that's made on a whim. It is the hardest thing that you will ever have to go through. I hope. It's the hardest thing my husband and I have had to go through to date. And, you know, I'm really lucky that we were so aligned on everything, my husband and I. And I couldn't have asked for a more supportive partner through the process. But I know that's not always the case. And I just want people out there to understand how difficult it is in the moment, but the aftermath too. And if there was a way that we could be looked after here at home, it really would help a lot.
Do you believe that had you had that service here, that the whole thing would have been so much different? Is that what you hold in your heart?
I really do. I really do. I think the waiting was mentally exhausting, draining. It changed us. There's no doubt about that. And I don't believe we would have had to wait as long, like that 6 weeks, when, you know, I could feel her. I could feel her moving. Her heartbeat was still there. We would go into the scans, and like, saying this out loud actually makes me think I'm such a bad person. But just if somebody else is going through it and they need to hear it, we would go into the scans nearly hoping that there wouldn't be a heartbeat, because the decision would have been made for us. Mm-hmm. And that's not a position you ever want to be in.
Mm-hmm.
If we could have been looked after here, I believe it could have been quicker. We wouldn't have, like, the travelling, like the flying, the whole process, booking the flights, booking the hotel, picking the clinic. All of those things together just add to the mental load that you're going through at the time. It probably does make you question, are you doing the right thing, a lot more, as opposed to if you were here and the healthcare professionals here were saying, I know exactly what you need to do and this is what we advise. But they can't do that now. They can't tell you what you should do. They can only give you the information that they have. I also just really, you know, the Health Act is so important. There is absolutely no doubt about that. But aside from that, just if anybody is going through it, just to know that other people have been there too, and that there is help, there are support services that you can utilise. We didn't do it enough. And that's one message I would love people to understand, to do a pick up the phone and ask for help. We were also in a lucky position that we could afford that scan in the early days, as well as, you know, you pay for your flights, accommodation and your visit to the clinic. We could afford that. Some people can't. And that's not fair. And again, you know, it was such a horrendous situation. But when we took a step back after, we were actually quite lucky with the support that we got in Holles Street or in the hospital. We were living in Dublin. We could go in and out for the scans as needed. We got referred to a therapist who was unbelievable and helped us so much. And that's because of where we are.
Not everybody will not have everybody those kind has. Of services.
No. And I didn't know that. I didn't know that until after. And we feel very lucky that we got those services, because they really helped us a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So the health equity aspect of it is a huge problem too.
How have you been since? Or how are you now, more importantly?
I'm way better now. We have been so fortunate to go on and have another baby after everything. With that came its own challenges and emotional ups and downs. But there is no doubt about it. I was broken. I couldn't really, I cocooned myself from everybody. I would have previously been quite outgoing. I completely cocooned myself, threw myself into work. Didn't really allow myself to enjoy things. Again, only for my husband to been so supportive and helping me and pushing me to get out and get back to myself. It really takes a strain on you mentally long term.
Mm-hmm. Even that thing of people knowing you were pregnant.
Yeah, yeah.
And feeling that you have to, I mean, a lot of people wouldn't expect you to explain, but you probably, did you feel that you had to explain or how did you deal with that?
It definitely was difficult. I actually just sent a message to a lot of people. And then I basically just went silent. Mm. My close network, I kept them close. But I had to protect myself. Our therapist helped us through that. She made us feel, she reminded us that it was okay to feel what we were feeling. Like, you know, you feel angry, you feel bitter. I had so many friends who were due babies at the same time and the same month. And I couldn't bring myself to connect with them. Mm-hmm. And that wouldn't be in my nature.
I know, but sometimes all you need is for somebody to say, that's normal to feel like that, you know, exactly. And to allow that to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we had that from the therapist we were referred to. And without that, like, I don't know, you know, like you said, you just need somebody to say it out loud to you in a safe space. If we didn't have that support, you know, maybe it would have been more mentally challenging. I don't know. But definitely better now.
Yeah, well, that's good to hear. Yeah. But your message is you want the safeguards in place, obviously, and all of these tests to be done in a professional way, as you'd expect.
Yeah.
But the whole thing needs to be more coherent. Mm-hmm. You need to get answers in a more timely fashion, mm-hmm. so that you don't have to make that awful choice that you had to make.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that essentially what you see needs to happen?
Essentially. It really is. And I think the health equity part of it is huge too. I didn't realise that as much. I'm from the country. I'm not from Dublin. So that is something that's I'm quite passionate about. And just awareness of the services that are there. I don't think that's very widely known. But for people to know that they're not alone. The Act just needs to be changed. There's a lot of people working on that, so I won't labour on that too much. But just support for people mentally, and just to let them know that they will be okay.
Darla, thank you so much for being brave enough to tell your story. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
And if you've been affected by anything that you've heard there, please reach out to somebody. The Felacon support line number is 085-249-6464. That's 085-249-6464. Or you can phone the Samaritans and their number is 116 123. That's 116 123.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.